Welcome to Music City Revival. I am your host, Dan Hagen. This is podcast episode number 11. And you can find us, we are streaming right now on X. And you can find us at musiccityrevival.live. And my guest today is Courtney Turner, and she's the host of the Courtney Turner podcast, WIM, What is Movement? And her new show coming soon, The Right Voices. She is also a speaker and aerial acrobatic performer, having spent her academic career largely steeped in the world of philosophical and psychological texts, and being a passionate athlete and performing artist, paved the way for the world in which she is currently immersed. Many today know her as the host of the Courtney Turner podcast, where she boldly seeks truth, diving into a myriad of deep topics surrounding issues of health, fitness, medicine, philosophy, psychology, politics, geopolitics, and sociocultural zeitgeist. However, she was born with a rare set of circumstances that has greatly impacted all aspects of her life. All human beings, this is a quote from Courtney, all human beings are designed to move, and the ways in which we do are our unique creative expressions. Welcome to Music City Revival, and thank you for hosting me at your place, and it's great to be here. So how are you doing tonight?
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on the show. Yeah, I'm doing well.
Awesome.
I'm tired. We just got back.
You just got back. Can we talk about, can you introduce your main, this guy, the main man?
Well, he's behind the scenes, but he's saying hi.
But, yeah. But you guys were in Florida, right?
Yeah.
And you did like a tour.
Two back-to-back. I spoke at the Reawaken America tour two Saturdays ago. And then this past Saturday, there was a Stu Peters event, and we were promoting our Cause Fest there. So I did a speech there as well. And in between, we had several meetings, and I did several shows, and we just got back today.
Did you get a chance to go to the ocean at all? Or touch the water or anything?
Well, we did go to the pool,
that's water.
Yeah, that was pretty exciting because all summer long, I think we've gotten about 2 hours total. And we did go to the ocean once this summer, and that was to shoot a commercial with my friend Miriam, which is actually like, I think it's up to almost 30,000 views on Twitter now.
Sweet.
It was like a spoof of, those, which is very appropriate for today, actually. I wish we had the commercial to play. But it's a spoof of like the big pharma.
Was this something you sent me this video, right? And yeah. It was brilliant. I wish we could play that. Well, you know what we'll do? Uh-huh. Send that to me and
We can. Okay. Well, let's watch it.
Okay, let's do it.
Do you secretly suffer from COVID-19 vaccine remorse? Do you get frequent urges to confess to someone that you think you fucked up big time? Are you beginning to suspect that you were used as a lab rat in a live exercise? It's all right. The truth hurts sometimes. JJD, also known as jib jab denial, is a serious condition, but there is hope. Introducing Admit You're Wrong, a graphene oxide capsule so small you won't even see it. But don't worry, it knows where to go. It will find that refusal and zap it away. It's time to come clean with the lies, face your shadow, and become a better human being. It's time to admit you were used in a worldwide psyop and played Russian roulette with your life, and maybe even your child's life too. Admit You're Wrong can help. Admit You're Wrong is not for everyone, but don't ask your Rockefeller doctor about it. The most common side effects include feelings of deep remorse and severe insomnia. Other side effects are common sense and critical thinking. Other side effects include explosive diarrhea and a desire to apologize profusely to all the people you shamed. You may also have a desire to question your entire existence. Do not take Admit You're Wrong if you're okay with being a brainwashed NPC or a pincushion for Big Pharma. People who have been jabbed and boosted 4 or more times are unfortunately not good candidates for Admit You're Wrong. Admit You're Wrong can give you a new lease on life. Call today 1-800-FUCK-BIG-PHARMA for more information.
That is perfect. And I love, you know, using comedy is so effective. Yeah. Who is it? Oliver. Who is it that his quote, he says, if you want to tell people the truth, mm-hmm. make them laugh or they'll kill you.
Right.
And it's so true.
Yeah.
It's like there's, you know, in tyrannical times like this, a comedian is best fit to guide us. And mm-hmm. when they went after comedians, mm-hmm. you know, like when you go after comedians or you know, artists, music artists for, right. you know, you're like, you know, you're in trouble. You've
right.
got
Orwellian like, times.
Right? Yeah. You know, and they did, they went after that, you know, before even recent times, I mm-hmm. remember when Jerry Seinfeld said, mm-hmm. I'm not going to colleges anymore okay. because they are so threatened. I get mm-hmm. canceled. And he said his own daughter mm-hmm. basically canceled him. And yeah. like, you know, and he's, you know, and it's like, that's, boy, that's real trouble. Because I went to a very liberal arts mm-hmm. college, University of North Texas, and studied mm-hmm. jazz performance. And it was a great environment because mm-hmm. Denton, Texas is, it's a unique place to be at college because it's all about the arts. And as mm-hmm. a matter of fact, there's, at that time, there was most colleges, it's all about the Greek life and everything mm-hmm. else is something in the background.
Right.
It was more not cool to be Greek, which you know how it works is the Greek people mm. turn into the elite, right? It's right. like it, one connects to the sure. other. Okay. But the point is this, the idea of going to college and being censored, we were doing all kinds of things. Mm. That's the place where your mind should be open. You should be exploring things. Mm. The greatest music I ever listened to was, to be honest, late night baked at a buddy's house with five or six of us mm-hmm. listening to Miles Davis records, listening to mm-hmm. tribute to Jack Johnson, Miles Davis, and mm-hmm. listening to, you know, John McLaughlin. But the and in that period of time, I still look back and I'm still listening to all of those records mm-hmm. because I still, a lot of times, those are the best records there are because I went to a place that was a melting pot with people from all over the world. And mm-hmm. there was something unique happening. These Canadian prodigies took mm-hmm. over these monster musicians. Mm. And though I hate socialism and government being involved in anything, I'll say this. The Canadian government, which has gone way commie, like mm-hmm. way off the deep end, you know, Trudeau is like the new Hitler of mm-hmm. his region. You know, Canada funded a lot of these students to go to college because they knew that they would come back and teach, and they did mm-hmm. and be on the scene. Mm-hmm. So there is a level. It's the one good thing I can say about the government. And, mm-hmm. and though I hate the government being involved in anything, that's one good thing I can say. And so, but the point is in a college, that's the place where we should be able to learn all this stuff. So mm-hmm. what's your story and how did you get awakened? You have an illness. I don't know if mm-hmm. you want to start with that, but how did you become awakened? Was that something you early?
So I woke up in 2020.
Okay.
Yeah. I was living in Santa Monica, California, and it was a very, very draconian lockdowns, and everybody's wearing masks. And I found myself just incredibly depressed and anxious and very isolated. So I'm hearing impaired. I learned how to speak by reading lips. So I actually didn't get hearing aids until I was almost 6 years old. And I didn't realize how much I still depended on all the nonverbal cues and yeah. lip reading until all the coping mechanisms I spent my life developing were then stripped from me because everybody's wearing a face diaper. And so that was really, really frustrating. Yeah.
That's a really important topic to mm-hmm. talk about. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a whole group of people that were alienated.
Yeah.
Right.
And especially deaf children, because as I mentioned, I learned how to speak by reading lips.
Mm-hmm.
So now these children don't have any means of developing coping strategies for alternative speech development mm-hmm. patterns. So they don't have the auditory input in order to develop those speech patterns. And so they're really disadvantaged. I mean, I would argue everybody was disadvantaged.
But
for
you're
them,
learning
it was really
in those years because kids were set years behind in their yeah. education altogether.
Especially those children.
And yeah. those children yeah. are so important because the way that your neurological system works, I had a neurosurgeon that was a guitar student. And he was one of these guys. I'd have doctors and lawyers, and they'd say to me all the time, I would trade everything that I do if I could do what you do with like music, playing guitar, right? And of course they say that, but were they willing to struggle financially? And the answer is no. Right, you know, they're saying that, but at the same time, there was something true about saying, listen, I've got all the money in the world, but I don't love it. I'm trapped in this. And you have freedom and you're passionate and you're doing what you love and your gift. And that's golden. And that was a great blessing to hear that as we're struggling financially to do, which to a certain extent, my whole life has been that way because I've always been the black sheep of music and everything. But the point is, he told me this. He said, you know, Dan, he said basically, the reason why I'm saying that is as a neurologist, I understand there's certain ages that your greatest development happens. And those early years are so important for the motor functions of your whole body. And then he said, there's like the other, like, I can't remember the exact ages, but one was like really young, clearly when you're a toddler, when you're a baby, when you're a toddler, and when you're developing those. So to miss out on that can really miss on development that sets those kids way far behind. And the interesting thing about that is, you know, in the end, I kind of called him out on, it was kind of a cop out for not practicing because he was kind of like, well, that's why. And I'm like, well, did you practice this week? Oh, you didn't. So there, he didn't last that long, but it was important to learn that. And that's an important thing. You know, it's a funny thing is a day or two before Halloween, I went into like a Mapco to pay cash for some gas. And it had a sign and it said, please no masks in here. In this store. And I was like, so I went up to this is so bizarre. And this is me just, I'm so bold about my beliefs and all this that I won't tolerate any of the COVID, you know, stuff now. And the branch COVIDians, that was a good thing that came up. But I went up to the guy, I went to congratulate the guy. And I said, hey, I love that you have the sign. He goes, that's for Halloween. I said, oh, well, hey, I just love seeing it. He goes, don't get into any political stuff in here. I said, oh, really? Oh. I said, you know what? I said, yeah. I said, and he goes, well, I can ask you. He goes, we're a private business. I can ask you to leave. And I said, oh, yeah? Fuck you. I said, I'm never coming back to this place again. Fuck you, asshole. And I walked out and the funny thing is I went to a gas station because he went there. Like you can get, and yes, he can do. I walked out. I wasn't going to like stay there. Right. But I wanted to say, you said what you said, and that's how I'm going to say it. Right. Cause I'm Italian. I speak and I have no problem saying the word fuck. And I love that you do too on that. But I went to the BP across the way and there was a woman wearing a mask. And I was just like, what are you people still doing living in that? But there's so many people still trapped, right? And do you think part of that is just a pattern that you get? A lot of people are pattern oriented and they're stuck into that pattern or whatever. Because isn't it bizarre that there are people still there?
Yeah.
Right? Like you got out of it really quickly.
I was never in it.
Okay. Well, I mean, you got into the truth really quickly. Like you woke up very quickly, right?
Well, no. I mean, I always make the joke that it took me forever to find the train station. Then I found the high speed rail and I'm trying to catch up. So no, I mean, it was 2020 when I woke up. So I didn't wake up quickly. But I never fell for the mask. I mean, the mask immediately, I knew the mask caused harm. And not only did I know that it wasn't doing good, I knew instantly it was doing harm. So I was not happy about the mask. I did not buy into, you know, really any of the fear porn, fear propaganda. I don't know. From the very beginning, it just didn't seem legitimate to me.
Yeah.
There were a lot of inconsistencies, a lot of contradictions. There were... and I could go through and list them all, but
the basic sniff test.
And then, I mean, I honestly just with everything, I remember one of my best friends asked me, she said, you don't seem at all scared. Like, you know, it doesn't seem to faze you. And I said, no, I'm not. And she said, why? And I told her, well, firstly, it kind of just feels like a scam. I don't really believe that it's real. And I said, but secondly, if it is, I just kind of feel like with everything I've been through in my life, this isn't the thing that's going to take me out. And if it is, then it's my time. So no, I wouldn't say like I woke up quickly, but I didn't fall for, I mean, I, you know, I only wore a mask when I was really, and because I was in, you know, Santa Monica, it was really hard. You know, they were arguing with me in my own building. I got thrown out of doctor's offices. It was a really hard time and everything was shut down. I would go down to the liquor store once a day because the owner was the only person I found like that I encountered who would quote unquote honor my medical exemption for wearing a mask, not wearing a mask, and who actually talked to me. And I realized how starved I was just to see people's naked face and have a conversation. So
they were going after people on the beach in California. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that? They would come and like have a SWAT team for some guy doing yoga, you know, at the Santa Monica Boulevard and stuff like that. I mean, it was just like, you know, insane. And so from a health front, since you've been dealing with health adversity for a long time, were you prepared? Did you understand the immune system? And was your knowledge at least kind of high because of what you had to deal with? Or was this a quick altogether like?
No, I mean, so just, I don't know how familiar you are with my birth story. Tell me, for your audience. Well, yeah, because they're kind of like not related at all. And in fact, I think it actually made the wake up really intense for me because there was tremendous cognitive dissonance. So for those who don't know, my mom was sick during first trimester of pregnancy. She had a test done. It was called the titer testing. So for those who aren't familiar, that's when they do an antibody reading. They were trying to determine, and you know, I will just preface this for your audience because if you know, those who don't know my audience, I'm sure it's pretty versed. But I have gone pretty far down the, you know, virology rabbit hole. And I don't actually think, you know, viruses, as we are taught, is as being a pathological contagion is the real story. But I will share the story as it was told to me. And as I grew up my whole life knowing this to be my birth story. So they were doing this antibody testing to see whether or not the baby had been afflicted. That would be me. They had read the test as being 112. The doctor was dyslexic. They've determined that they thought the test results were actually 121. If the doctor had read the test as being 121, that my mom would have aborted me. And so when I was born on Super Bowl Sunday in the middle of a blizzard. My dad was a huge football fan. And I don't know if today this is why I'm still not a fan of football, but he was a huge football fan. He wanted to watch the game and I was not arriving conveniently. And of course, he didn't just want to watch the game. He wanted his friend, the doctor, to watch the game with him. So they tried to induce labor because I wasn't arriving conveniently. But when they shot the epidural, I had already started to crown, which rendered my mother with a spinal headache and therefore she couldn't lift me.
Can you describe crown just for, because you know.
Oh, when I was, when my head was starting to come through.
Okay. The canal.
Yeah.
Okay.
But because they shot the epidural at that moment, my mom ended up with a spinal headache. And so that rendered her unable to lift her head up for the first 2 weeks of my life to hold me. So those who have ever had a spinal headache, it's incredibly excruciating and often very debilitating. So when she finally could, she felt like there was something wrong, particularly with my eye. She kept saying that my eye was rolling up in the top of my head. And so she asked them to do a bunch of tests she suspected that the doctor had made a mistake. They knew the doctor was dyslexic, so they were covering up for the doctor. When she finally had decided that my eye looked a lot like her father, so my maternal grandfather had just had cataract, and she finally found a doctor who confirmed I was born with a cataract in one eye. They did what was called a cataract removal procedure, very different back then than it is today. Today it's a pretty routine procedure. Most people are, you know, out and about the next day. They're, you know, up and they can see and they're functioning pretty quickly. That was not the case for me. They pulled the iris. They left debris behind the retina. They had to go back in a few weeks later and do what's called, now I'm only 3 months old. So pretty shortly after, they had to go back in and do what was called a retinal cleanup,
when they did this, because they had to clean out the debris that was left behind my retina. When they did this, they found pigmentation behind the eye that I see out of. And that at that point, they diagnosed me with congenital rubella. So they had decided that my mom had germ measles during first trimester of pregnancy. And they had prognosed that I was going to be completely blind, deaf, autistic, retarded, and, you know, most likely unable to walk, move. And fortunately, they were wrong. And fortunately, my mom didn't believe them. However, we did know my
mom. Can we talk about that right there for a second? Because that's so important. That topic that is not brought up enough. That I can't tell you how many times, and I'm sure you, because you've dealt with it firsthand, where they give either a wrong diagnosis that's totally wrong, and the fact that they're covering up for a doctor that's dyslexic. First of all, I am slightly dyslexic, and I use it as an advantage. It's, you know, but the idea of covering up for it, if he's making a mistake for you, he's making mistakes all the time. They're covering up. That in itself is totally outlandish and bizarre that they're covering from him instead of like
they were covering for legal purposes.
Of course. Yeah. But the fact that that's even allowed, right? That there's no check and balances. But how many people I know that separate from that, that they get the most dismal diagnosis from a doctor. And it seems like usually that's where they do go. And and if you understand the subconscious mind, what most people are going to go with that. And if you think of the worst, whatever the worst diagnosis is, and you focus on it, that's where you're going to go. So first of all, the fact that you had a mother that had that intuition is so incredible and powerful, and that she stood up for you is so important. But that whole thing of you know, that in this system, and we're going to get into talking about why it's so corrupt and all that in the detail, but that alone, I just like want to tell everybody, if you're going to a doctor and they tell you the worst thing, just know that the pattern in history says they're usually wrong on the wrong side of overdiagnosing rather than giving something hopeful, right?
I don't know that I would classify it that way. What I will say, and we will get into why it is the case that way, they are trained to diagnose. So they're not trained to find root cause. Typical doctors that we in Western medicine, their training has conditioned them to search for a diagnosis. And so they think they're being helpful because they give you a diagnosis and then hopefully you'll be able to find either, you know, as a they called it a pill for the ill or some sort of a procedure. There will be some sort of treatment. And the word treatment is very significant because, you know, they cannot do cures in the Western medicine paradigm. But I wouldn't necessarily say that they're, you know, wrong more than they're right. I would say they don't know. So
is that they, meaning specifically, they fall on the pessimistic side.
Well, they're looking for a diagnosis. Yeah. So that's really what it is. I don't want to put the blame on all doctors. Yeah. You know, I think most doctors go into the field because they genuinely want to help people. Unfortunately, that is the program. That's the indoctrination, which they incur as a result.
They're looking for symptoms, not the root cause.
Right. They're looking for diagnosis. So they're looking for like a label to give a collection of symptoms, as opposed to looking for the symptoms to be a clue to what could possibly be the root cause that's causing it. So all this to say that I did have several complications, and we realized this. Certainly, you know, we started with the eye. It turns out that I am bilaterally hearing impaired, as I mentioned. We did not know really until I was about 6 years old when I got hearing aids because I learned how to speak by reading lips. But I am. I also had heart surgery when I was a year old. I was born with hypotonic limbs. So for those who are not familiar, that's the opposite of hypertrophy. So like when someone goes to the gym, they build muscles. My muscles were not developing. It was affecting primarily my limbs. I had asymmetrical bone development, you were talking about the graphic motor development. I had fine graphic motor impairment. So those were very delayed and I was struggling in that department. And there was stunted growth. There were several other complications. And when they realized that there were going to be these challenges, my parents did sue. And we had the same lawyer, actually, as the lawyer for the Larry Flint free speech hustler case. And it was called the wrongful birth case. So I don't think my parents thought I was wrongfully born, but that was the angle the lawyers used, because the alternative would have been to have aborted me, which I think ties into all of this. So when you asked if I had more of an awareness, I think it was very much the opposite. In 2020, it was very difficult for me because I knew that people were lying. I knew they were now pushing all sorts of medical advice and procedures, and I knew there was this injection that was going to be coming down the pike, and because I started doing a tremendous amount of research, and I then had my eyes open to how much of the medical system was not what I thought it was. But I spent my whole life really at the mercy of the Western medical system. So I, in order to be where I am, and I'm very grateful to a lot of the doctors who I worked with throughout my entire childhood, I don't know that I'd be in the position I'm in today and be functioning at the level I'm functioning. So, I don't think all of allopathic medicine is bad. I think that some of modern medicine is phenomenal, but what I don't like is that there's not more of a synergy and that one has been pushed so far ahead of the other. But for me, I spent so much of my life trusting them, and I was forced to, because you kind of have to, especially as an infant when you have no choice. And now suddenly my trust was completely betrayed. So that was what was really hard for me in 2020.
And, I always like to make this disclaimer when mm-hmm. I say some negative things about mm-hmm. Western medicine in right. general. I'm more inclined towards Eastern medicine mm-hmm. type of, which is finding the symptoms, the root cause, and that's because my mother was an herbalist. But I always make mm-hmm. this disclaimer. We have the best surgeons in the world here. Mm-hmm. And you dealt with a lot of surgery and that yep. type of thing. And those people will save your life. And mm-hmm. thank God we have the best. Like yep. I say this. If I was in a debilitating car accident, there's right. nowhere I'd rather be life-flighted than Vanderbilt Hospital. Mm-hmm. However, mm-hmm. I learned firsthand, and we'll talk about some of the things that, mm-hmm. that I believe in. Since my immune system was so high, my knowledge from my mother from mm-hmm. a very, very early age,
right.
she was somebody that wanted to be a nurse. Her yeah. sister was a nurse, uh-huh. but she couldn't handle the blood and guts. Mm-hmm. And so she went down the allopathic means because of that, right?
Right.
So I knew how the immune system worked in the Rockefellers from a very mm-hmm. early age because of her.
Right.
So I developed a belief early. By the time I was 18 years old, and I'll just tell you quickly mm-hmm. my story, how my awakening, besides my mother, I was going to college at the University of North Texas, which is one of the most competitive music mm-hmm. programs. Sure. And with it, it's very cutthroat. There's competition, stress, peer pressure. Sure. Plus I was, touring in bands. I was doing way too much. And it was just, I had carpal tunnel. Okay. Mm-hmm. In my wrist. And it was in my left wrist. I went to a doctor mm-hmm. and they were like, well, we can give you drugs or we can do surgery or both inevitably. Right. And I was like, you're not touching my wrist. Are you uh-huh. kidding? Cause by instinct, intuition, I said, no, that's my motor. Like I developed this and I mm-hmm. know that that's not going to be good.
Well, you're a musician. You kind of need it.
I immediately rejected that. Mm-hmm. And my mother's background helped. Mm-hmm. The first place I went to was acupuncture. Mm-hmm. And with acupuncture, I learned very quickly about meridian lines and mm-hmm. energy fields. Sure. And that's the very mechanism. And this is, the Chinese,
right.
where they find the root cause in all of your neurons, mm-hmm. all of your energy fields, all of that come out to your fingers and your mm-hmm. toes. Mm-hmm. And everything's connected. So whereas the doctor was looking at this is right. the problem, the real problem that I learned mm-hmm. was my neck like this for years from practicing car accidents. I was in a lot of car accidents. So my neck is like bowed the wrong way. So it was a lot of with stress, it was pinching nerves, right. that kind of thing. And so then acupuncture helped,
sure.
but I had my real problem was really deep knots in mm-hmm. my back and higher neck that would clamp down And this is where I ended up feeling with it, feeling it. And, but it was the acupuncturist that helped me understand meridian lines, that this was the source. This is where the, I was
That's where he manifested,
this was the source. And these Western doctors had no idea. There's no way they were going to even go there.
Right.
And so that told me right away when I was, I mean, that was, you know, I don't know, 20, 19 years old.
Yeah.
And that was a red flag right away. So I had to, because I'm practicing 10 hours a day, doing gigs on the road, the stress of competition, all of that. There's no way that I could just let this go on. So that led to deep tissue massage. And I never go to what I call patty cake massages. I find that what really worked was the people that find the trigger points and and you know, stick their thumb, whatever it is. And I'd go, you know, it was mostly men. I'd find like the biggest guys that could hurt me, because I needed it so deep. And I did find women that could really hurt me. I had one time, this guy Cody, a friend of mine, this was years later, was going through my armpit. He goes, I just want to let you know what I'm doing, because nobody lets me go this deep. He's like, you have a really high threshold for pain. And he goes, I just want you to know what I'm doing. He goes, I'm going through your armpit, Dan, and I'm touching your collarbone right now. And I'm like, you hate me, don't you, Cody? And I love the guy. He's a friend of mine. I was teaching him guitar lessons. But that helped me tremendously. And that helped me on my way to realizing that, you know, this whole, that's kind of my story. But I believe we have the best surgeons in the world. And because those surgeons were such a part of saving you, that's a big part of it. And for you, it was probably all tied together, and they really did help you. So it's important that the goal, our common goal is to push medicine and all this, not to crucify our doctors at the witch hunt, because many of them were hoodwinked. And the way they were trained in college, which which is all funded by big pharma, right? They fund the programs. They fund, you know, the pharmaceutical companies, the practices, and all that. So don't you think that doctors were hoodwinked too in the process, that many of them, because of centrally controlled CDC protocol that kind of took over, that many doctors, if they would have looked at each patient separately, because let's be honest, somebody who's greatly obese is going to deal with COVID differently than somebody who's really healthy, has a higher immunity, younger, that kind of thing. And the fact that they went to a centralized routine, which was horrible, ventilators and all this, like they were, do you remember when they were killing lots of people in hospitals in New York because they were putting them on ventilators right away? And we found out they were getting paid. Well, how much was it? Do you remember that?
$39,000.
$39,000 per ventilator. And so lots of people, but a lot of those doctors, because they were probably persuaded in the way that they were taught, but it was like the FDA and the CDC just took rank and kind of got in the way of the whole process. And, you know, and, you know, so do you think that doctors, that many doctors were hoodwinked, that they just really, that they really didn't see the reality of this? Or how, I'm just curious in general, like what do you think in general from doctors' perspectives? Like,
I think it's multifaceted. I mean, I think that, you know, you have to start with the training, their education. So they're trained in allopathic model of medicine. So they're trained to believe that you look for a diagnosis. And right there, I think, is part, you know, as I already explained, part of the problem. So when you mentioned COVID and how people react differently, I think that's a whole separate conversation. What is COVID?
We can
save that for another time.
But
I think that's part of the problem, right? They're looking to slap a label on something, and then they're looking to give either a treatment or a pill for it. So I think that's first and foremost. But then, of course, some of them really were trapped. You know, I spoke to several doctors firsthand who, you know, would maybe off the tell their patients off the record, I don't want to tell you, you have to take this, or, you know, whether it be the drug or whether it be, you know, an injection or, you know, whatever protocol it may be. There were many doctors who felt like they really were trapped. They would lose their job. They would lose their license.
And I think that was really, really hard for a lot of them. You know, their job security was really at stake. And of course, their reputation was at stake, which is ironic because, you know, they signed the Hippocratic Oath, which is thou shalt do no harm. There's also informed consent, which
can you explain the oath? So clearly for people that don't know that, you know, what are they agreeing to?
Well, the very first, the major part of it is thou shalt do no harm. So that's so they're obligated to, you know, first and foremost prioritize that. And that was, you know, and for a lot of them, that was very hard because they knew that some of the protocols would do harm. I think a lot of doctors knew that even things as simple as masks, I mean, some of them were brainwashed and they thought that the masks were just great. But there were a lot of doctors who knew masks do harm. I mean, if you think about it, I don't want to be too crude, but, you know.
Be as crude as you want to. This is.
Well, you wouldn't go to the toilet and expel bodily waste and then shove it back up, right? But that's what you do when you wear a mask.
Yeah.
You expel your bodily waste through your breath and then you're expected to inhale it back in. And it's really gross and it's a petri dish. And they've shown it. They've done experiments and there's all sorts of bacteria and, you know, just really gross things that collect. There were a lot of people, and there was a couple of eye doctors who did some studies on this. I personally was experiencing it where people were getting chalazions on their eye as a result of all the bacteria. And just, you know, the moist is you're breathing and it's going right up into your eye. That's, of course, especially if you wear glasses, like they would fog them up. So there were a lot of eye doctors who were seeing a huge rise in chalazions during that time. And there was a doctor specifically out of New York City that I cited in one of my articles who did a study, a small sample study on the rise of chalazions as a result and the correlation to the mask. So
speaking of masks, because it is a very important topic. And, you know, one of the things that masks represent is being obedient, shut your mouth, a muzzle. So
it's a dehumanization.
And for children.
Yeah.
Psychologically, it is more traumatic than people realize.
Of course,
that fear and the control.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. Part of what the whole Islam thing, making a force on women, that is, you're the slave, you're obedient to the man,
submission,
right?
Submission. Yeah.
The submission. That's an important word. But do you remember that one of the things they used to push their point was the Spanish flu of 1918. Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you learn that Fauci did a study because he was pushing that whole narrative and he actually did a study
that the mask didn't work
that proved that the greatest cause of death, Fauci's study, was the bacterial pneumonia from wearing a mask. Yeah. And my first thought is a coal miner working in a coal mine, collecting all of this toxin, you know, and then going back every day. Cause is that poor coal miner going to put on a new mask every day?
Right.
No, it's like a diaper. It literally is like a diaper.
It's a petri dish. It's gross.
And they're going to use the same thing over and over again. And so his own study, all of us in the alternative circles, we were finding all of this, and it's like, every single thing was a lie, right? And
well, I mean, then you go back and you look at the Spanish flu, and of course, that whole thing was a lie as well.
Give us a brief synopsis of what they called it,
like the telegrapher's disease. You know, they had decided there was a lot of evidence to indicate it was really a result of radiation poisoning.
Where do you think the radiation poisoning
telegraph
came from?
At the surge of telegraphs at that time. That's why they initially called it the telegrapher's disease.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I didn't catch that one. See, there's so much.
There's a book by Arthur Furstenberg that draws a lot of parallels to increase in technology and radiation.
100%.
And flus and pandemics,
I mean,
quote unquote,
the whole 5G thing is so important. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm bad about it, but I try, you know, like my phone, I also use it as an alarm.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to be more aware of keep it away from my head at least that night.
I know.
Right. Like I need to get a regular, like old school alarm clock.
Yeah.
That's away from my head because It's radiation.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, call me crazy, but I do never use a microwave. Mm-hmm. Use in the oven. Like I'm in this cowboy period at the lake where I'm like cooking stuff up on the lake with fire and breaking down the, you know, all the wood. And I love that. But, and this is all goes back to my mom and everything she's doing, but she's been right about all of this. And the way I see it is the more you're aware of radiation exposure and the more technology progresses and quickly, the more we're exposed to it. So my attitude out of instinct is any way I can cut some of it down is the right direction. Like for instance, whenever, and I call the TSA, the, what is it? The terrorist, the terrorism, sexual abuse. I have all kinds of different, but I always, and they make it seem like you can't opt out, you know, of the radiation machine. Yeah. That's what I call them. And I've studied them. They're banned in Europe.
Yeah.
Right. And do you remember we got that?
But they're also like, I mean, they're full. I mean, the ones now are more like grayscale, black and white. But right after the Patriot Act was
it was the underwear bomber, right after
it was implemented, right after 9/11, those cameras were full, like you could see everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And no, I don't remember signing anything saying that they couldn't sell this on some porn site or
no. And and just the fact that, let's just talk about the fact that you have a grown man or woman, and many of these the TSA found out to have been rapists, pedophiles, the worst of the worst, criminals.
They molest you or they molest your things. It's
and,
awful.
And so I have this thing still. And any man, I just feel very strongly when they took the TSA into football stadiums. That's when I gave up on the NFL. I said, listen. You are not a man. You are not an alpha male. When you let some creep touch your child's genitals, that is something that a real man should punch somebody's lights out. I don't care if it's anybody, a stranger. It's different maybe if it's a doctor diagnosing you or something like that. But what kind of message are you telling the kid that that's okay for anybody? So that is one thing. But I have this thing. When I go through the TSA, I'll never go through the radiation machines. Mm-hmm. One, the privacy thing, that's not as big for me. I'm a guy, you know, there's my nuts. Okay. It's that the radiation, and I'm fully aware of that. So they make it seem now. And so if people don't know what opt out means, that means you do have a choice not to go in the radiation machine, but then you have to go to the metal detector. Now, they make it seem they do a psychological
Then you also have to be molested.
And I'm getting to that. So what they do now, it used to be really clear that you had an open lane where the, you know, separate lane for the metal detector and a separate one for the radiation. And there would be a security there. And it slowly, at time, they do a psychological thing to make you think you don't have the opt out option. Right. And how they do that now is you just see like a cone up or a belt up or something like you can't. It's like a psychological thing where people think, oh, I just can't do it because I'm the only guy who ever does it. I'm the only guy in the airport every time I fly. Okay. And what I do is I go up and go, I'd like to opt out. And so the first thing they do, it's more and more psychological. Yeah, we don't have somebody right now. We're going to have to call somebody on reserve or a manager. And then it's like, so you can, you know, if you're late to the airport, you're rushed into not doing it. So it's always now it's like a 10-minute wait, 5 or 10 minutes. And I'm waiting. And so here's what happens is for me, they bring me through, they walk you through, is this your stuff? Is this your, these your shoes? Okay. They come over here. And the first thing when they go, all right, so you know what I'm doing? You're going to, and when they go, they go, do you have any sensitive areas, you know, that I should know about? I say, yeah, I'm a little bit sensitive about a grown man touching my balls. I'm not comfortable with it. And I understand the Fourth Amendment and you guys are actually terrorists. This is what I say to them. And I say, but go ahead and do what you've got to do. And that's how boldly I say it, because I'm letting you know you are a criminal. You are a terrorist. You are violating my rights. You are violating the Fourth Amendment. None of what you're doing is legal. And you know what they do? They submit to me. Because I talk to them from authority, from a man. And the first thing I'm doing, and this is important. And I have gay friends when I don't judge, but I'm letting him know that I think he's gay. Mm-hmm. And that is what I'm doing, is I'm turning the power. I'm the guy. I'm the authority, mm-hmm. not you. Mm-hmm. You're the little criminal pedophile. Mm-hmm. The little gay guy who's trying to touch my nuts, and I'm not comfortable, and this is illegal. Okay. And then I let go and let them, you know, do their thing. And then I'll joke, like when I'm traveling, and I'll say things, I just got a free massage from the TSA, right? But it's important that I'm letting them know mm-hmm. that I'm in charge, not mm-hmm. them, you know, right. And I'm making them feel like shit, and they should. And mm-hmm. and it's called asserting your rights. Mm-hmm. And it's called, I take the First Amendment as mm-hmm. far as I can take it. Mm-hmm. So if it puts me in jail, it puts me in jail. But we have to stand up for it. And this mm-hmm. is really important. Mm-hmm. We have the Second Amendment mm-hmm. in case the First Amendment fails. And a lot of people don't know how far you can take the First Amendment. Mm-hmm. And I love how Ron Paul says, you know, mm-hmm. you can talk about the weather. You can talk about, but the reason why we have the First Amendment is to say things about the government that they don't want us talking about. Mm-hmm. That's exactly why. And we have the Second Amendment to shoot at the government when the first, I love how JFK says this. Mm-hmm. He says, those that don't allow, you know, peaceful revolution to, I can't remember the exact, those who would infringe on peaceful revolution make violent revolution inevitable. Mm-hmm. And so my point is this, I'm as Second Amendment as you can be, but I don't think people are bold enough with the First Amendment. Mm-hmm. And the first part of it is mm-hmm. you've got to understand the Bill of Rights mm-hmm. really, really, really strongly. Mm-hmm. When I get pulled over and any kind of thing is, most of the time, there's a lot of people that libertarians that will say, oh, plead the fifth, don't talk to cops. I'm a little bit, there's a time and a place, but in most situations, mm-hmm. I get police walking away, shaking hands. I pray for them, even mm-hmm. though I don't like what they do and what mm-hmm. they're representing, mm-hmm. they're only human beings. Mm-hmm. And so I am a people person. So I find something with a police officer to connect with and realize mm-hmm. that if I come off with them, even though I'm carrying a gun most of the time, if I come off as a threat, just as a human being, when somebody does that to me, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh yeah, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And so the point is this, the first thing I do when I get pulled over and fully understanding my rights, and I feel like they're going in a way where they're going to, I say, hey, tell me your names, officer. And I say, let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Did you take an oath to the Tennessee Constitution and the United States Constitution? And that's when the game changes. That's when they go. Mm-hmm. And I'm speaking to them from a level of authority that their police chief doesn't speak to them. Mm-hmm. I become the dad and they become the child. And what they learn right away is, don't mess with this guy, because what you're telling them is, mm-hmm. I'm the guy that will assert my rights. And if you take this the wrong way, in the mm-hmm. tyranny way, I'll be the guy in court. I know you've got a body camera and you just admitted mm-hmm. that you understand, you took an oath to the Constitution. And what does that mean? I will defend the Constitution till death. Mm-hmm. And our that's true for police, military. And what does that mean? It means I will defend my oath to the Constitution mm-hmm. even when the government is wrong. My goal is to stand up for we the people, not the government.
Right.
And that's so important to know that I think all of this stems from realizing you're a unique child of God. You're an individual, and all liberty stems from there. Right. Right? And it's so important because we are educators. That's mm-hmm. why we are here.
Right.
And the beautiful thing is that you have things, you know, that I don't know. So mm-hmm. I can learn from you, and, you know, and there's this symbiotic relationship mm-hmm. that's really important. So what are ways do you think in general that people mm-hmm. can build their immune system, become healthier? Mm-hmm. So whether there is a legit pandemic, a mm-hmm. legit virus, that they can be less worried and more protected. What are some ways that you like to handle that?
I think people should take control of the things they can control. So yeah. I think things like your, you know, whatever you can do to improve your nutritional intake, you know, that goes a long way. I think that obviously movement is really powerful. That you had mentioned earlier, and I totally agree, the mind is really powerful. So, you know, I think positive mindset, and I don't mean that in like a, you know, just woo-woo kind of, but really building kind of a strong, you know, mindset, whatever that means for you. You know, building an environment where you have a support system. I think all of those things are.
So like there's, it's all 100% I agree with, and it's all this, you know, mind, body, spirit, it's all connected.
You build your terrain essentially. So
you're a very physical person as an acrobat. You're a weightlifter too, right? Okay.
I do CrossFit. Yeah.
You do CrossFit. Yeah. And that rate alone is so important. Mm-hmm. And your confidence level and your ability to understand
well,
that.
I used to, before, you know, 2020, I would do aerial acrobatic performances and I was a motivational speaker. So I would talk, my speech was mostly centered around using movement as a metaphor for life and using your physical training as a teacher to overcome adversity in other areas of life. You know, obviously we could, you know, go on and on about all the, you know, physiological, cognitive, mental benefits of movement. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely subscribe to all of that. But I think that a lot of people don't necessarily take into consideration the philosophical kind of the tutorial benefits, you know, using it as a teacher. And one of the things about physical training is that no matter, you know, how strong or adept you become in any kind of physical practice, it's really never going to be get easier. And so those challenges teach you a lot about how you can face adversity in other areas.
It teaches you how powerful your body really is. Mm-hmm. And when
I think really not just your body, but your mind.
Your mind.
It's really, yeah, it really teaches you about mindset. It teaches you about discipline. It teaches you delayed gratification. It teaches you about strategy. You know, what kinds of things you can do when things aren't working, how to navigate, problem solve. Yeah. So I think it really teaches you so much that's relevant for life.
I have this belief that you are your greatest doctor. Mm-hmm. That you, if you are wise and you learn your body, how it reacts, that you are your best physician and you are the most, if you become in tune with that through research, through training, seeing what your body, what it takes to recover. And you're like, wow, I lifted this much and now I did that. And like, wow, I didn't think I could do that. And and learning.
It teaches you, you're capable of hard things. Yeah.
But everybody's body is different. Mm-hmm. So what works from one body to another, I mean, like, take diets. I mean, there's people like Jordan Peterson that is a total carnivore diet. Mm-hmm. And that's not what I would prescribe in general, but he knows that's what works for him. So who am I to say, no, that's not, and even his daughter, right? Mm-hmm. And who am I to say, no, that's not what's good for you. No, right. Well, what does that mean? Right. That's what he's doing. He's tried everything else. Right. And that's the important thing is, I'm Dr. Dan. You are Dr. Courtney.
Well, doctor means the Latin derivation, the word doctor, the etymological term is a teacher. So that's really what doctors are designed to do, was to teach. Prior to now, we go to them to seek cure, which you're actually not actually allowed to do, which is ironic. But
and with that, all knowledge is self-knowledge in a way that, one, everybody learns different. Mm-hmm. Everybody's experience. What is knowledge? Well, knowledge to one person that's lived this life and learned things, a person that's lived on the street has learned different than somebody who lived in a gated community and went to Harvard. Mm-hmm. That knowledge and what helped this person thrive or survive is totally different. Mm-hmm. So for a guy, you know, that went down this road or a woman in this route to tell them what they should do with their life. Well, how do you know? Have you, that's why I love Jesus said, walk in a man's shoes before you can learn to communicate with, because, you know, and what does that mean? Communicating, but all knowledge is self-knowledge. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have to be willing to push ourselves in all those ways. And we're here to inspire people. So specifically on like building your immune system, like what are things you believe in, like food or healthy foods or remedies that that you have found that are successful for building your immune system?
Yeah, well, I would agree. I think it's very different for, you know, everyone. I'm not here to prescribe anything for anyone.
No.
You know, I think in general, we are being kind of attacked from every front. Less and less of our food is real.
Yep.
They're doing a lot of genetic modifications to our food. They are now Bill Gates has an attack on salt. So he's creating a salt alternative.
So I don't even know about this.
Yeah.
One.
So
what's that all about?
Yeah. So he's created a salt alternative that has a
he's salting our salt.
He's desalting our salt. It has no salt, no sodium chloride in it, or very little. And most foods, particularly packaged foods, are required to have salt in them. So it does beg the question, what's going to happen? Because this has now become FDA approved. So I don't know what's going to happen if now this is going to be snuck in, kind of like they're sneaking in a lot of bug products into our food under, you know, the names that you wouldn't recognize. I mean,
you will eat bugs and be, you will own nothing, eat bugs and be happy.
Right. So, I mean, I would just advise people, obviously, whatever they can do to eat more whole, real, natural foods. I know the thing is kind of like if God made it, you know, you need it. If man made it, you know, maybe in smaller quantities or avoid it. So I really think that, you know, again, the nuances of it are vary so much for different people. But you know, I found that
that's an important one. I like to say if it grows from the ground, it's meant to grow in your body. If it's made in a lab, not so much, right?
Right.
The topic of salt alone, are you a pink Himalayan salt person?
I love pink. Okay. I love salt. I mean, in general, but
you've studied the health benefits and even read the studies,
and Celtic salt has a lot of health benefits and now it's becoming very hard to find and also increasingly more expensive. So it just seems like there really is. So I would just, you know, again, I'm not here to tell people what, like, prescribe something for them. I would need
for you,
to know
what works for you.
Yeah,
what
I would need to know, but definitely, you know, the quality of water is really important. Whatever you can do to control your air environment. So, you know, we are being bombarded with, you know, all sorts of chemicals and stuff in the air. So if you, you know, have any kind of air purifier, that sort of thing, I would say, and obviously, like, sleep is really important. But yeah, I mean, for me, it varies depending on, you know, what I'm going through in my life and different stressors, whether they be physiological, emotional, or otherwise. At that time, different things are going to be beneficial or necessary.
Yeah, even in your own life, it can vary what's good for
absolutely.
You, right?
Things that really worked for me, you know, at one point in my life don't necessarily serve me now. So.
And the more that you learn and you're moving towards a healthy alkaline state in your body, that it's going to change. Like, you know, for me, the water thing is very important because the Kangen alkaline water that my whole family drinks, I haven't been sick in 12 years because of it. And that's what gave me the confidence during COVID to have no fear. And I worked the whole time. I was doing music stuff. I was playing shows with our friend Amy Pfeffer, right? And one of the things that was because of that, and that Kangen water, everybody should look into Kangen water, which Kangen in Japanese means back to origin. It started with Russian scientists, and then Japanese scientists took over the research, and they studied glacial water. And there's Lakote, France. There's a Lakote, France. Lakote, Mexico, Lourdes, France, and there's a place in Pakistan where there's these natural springs that people believe is like water. Like, if you remember in the Bible where there's that a paralyzed guy and he's by this pool and they swish around the water and he's trying to get there and 30 years he can't get there and Jesus comes and he's, you know, and cures this guy. But there's natural water that's perfect that at one time, God made perfect water. Like everything else, we've corrupted it, right? So there's studies of thousands of people, of doctors. They have, you know, people drink the water, they go in the water, and diseases go away. And, you know, my family found out about it because of my brother. And this is an interesting story. So my brother was in, because of And he was, I was the middle child. I would like to say I was such a great kid. They waited 6 years to have Mike, right? sarcasm. I was a devil and I still am, but a devil for good, a devil with a cause. But Mike was in Oklahoma. He was the equivalent of like a local, like Whole Foods. Okay. And so he knew every herb to tell somebody whatever their symptom was. Right. He really knew the store, their products, and understood fundamentally how the body worked and what, you know, not as a doctor, but hey, I think you should try this, right? Sure. So he had somebody approach him with the water and they brought in the water and he was immediately skeptical. Mm-hmm. He's like, I don't believe scam, bye. And just like, nope, you're not even getting in the time of day for me. Right. So they kept approaching him like the Jehovah's Witness. Like, I was like, just leave me alone. I'm working, please. So he said one day, he goes, listen, I don't really believe in your product, but you guys won't leave me alone. Like literally that way. And that's our family too.
Right.
The Sicilian side, like, what are you going to do about it? Right. Get out of my store right now. Okay.
Right.
So Mike said, I'll tell you what. I don't really believe in it. I'm skeptical, but I'll use a couple of my sick people here as guinea pigs.
Right.
So there was a guy with stage one prostate cancer. And
don't hit the table.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh,
it's going to make a lot of noise. I don't know what it's like for the audience, but I'm guessing it's not great for the audience.
Good. I'm also a percussionist, so you need to tell me that too.
Yeah.
So, you know, this guy had prostate cancer, stage one, fibromyalgia, a bunch of different stuff.
Sure.
And Mike gave him the water. And, you know, he 2 months later, drinking the water or something, total cancer remission, all symptoms of fibromyalgia, you know, gone. And we legally do not make medical claims. And I'm not claiming the water did that.
Right.
What I believe more is that the water helps to get your body to an alkaline state. And that helps the body to heal itself like it's intended to do.
Yeah.
So one after one, he was seeing that. And that's when, so the guy that had the prostate cancer went on a trip to California because this was in Oklahoma, in Tulsa. And he went on vacation and he didn't have his water, which is ironic because there's water stores all over for Konkan there.
Right.
And so all of his symptoms started coming back and he called my brother. And so the whole time when all these things were happening, he was reporting it to Michael. Yet he was, and this is also the Italian thing. See, it's Italian and the music. So he basically was pessimistic, like Michael was kind of treating him in the beginning, like, oh, it's not your water, dude. Trust me, it's not your water, you know.
Right.
So everything came back and he called Mike and goes, dude, what did you do to me? I'm starting to feel, he's like, what do you mean what did I do to you? He's like, all the stuff, the way I used to feel, I feel it again. He goes, I thought you said the water didn't help you. You know, and he kind of turned it back on him. Right. In other words, it was like he was like a crack addict now going, where do I get that water? You know, it was like it turned into that, like it turned the thing around. And Michael was playing devil's advocate. What do you mean? The water that wasn't working? Right. Well, why would you?
Why would you want that?
If you're back to how you're feeling, I didn't have any part. Why are you calling me?
Right.
And then, which was like pretty smart way to handle it. So what happened is he got a DVD. This is when DVDs were, you know, popular. And there was a guy by the name of Michael Canet, and he looks like a surfer dude, you know, probably 50 something, really good shape, really athletic, looks really healthy, this great personality. And there's this DVD, and the first part of it is the health benefits and his story. And and he's got everybody drinking the water there. I was trying to get, we're trying to set up the water machine so we could drink some, but I'm going to get water and I'm going to bring it to you guys for 30 days just to give it to you. And I just want, because I'll use you guys as guinea pigs. And this is what I say is I give people free water.
Right.
And we'll give you free water, Phillips. And I just say this. If it makes you feel better, then we'll talk. But if it does nothing, you'll never want to talk to me again about it. You'll be like, why, you know, we're just ignoring Dan. You know, we don't want him to bring this stupid water over here again. And so he watched this DVD and he listened to all the things that he said and not claims, but the things he said
right.
about the water.
Okay.
And he went and he said, I'm going to fact check all of this. I'm going to fact check every, because he already saw personal testimonies that were right. undeniable, that were right. miraculous. And once again, the water did not heal. We'd be like, be cool, FDA. You know,
right.
the company polices us. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad they do for the protection of the company, even though right. they're certified. It's a medical device in over 200 hospitals in Japan. And this is an important thing. And back to, you know, radiation. Mm-hmm. The company's never talked about this. I'm the only guy who brings this up, mm-hmm. and I'm very aware of Fukushima and radiation. Sure. And I heard Joe Rogan talking about it. He has a friend that does not eat fish from the Pacific.
Right.
I don't know if you've gone down that rabbit hole, but the contamination, there's no way to stop it. That's not why I'm not a nuclear guy. I don't mm-hmm. believe that, because of there's no way to secure safely, you know, the I'm trying to think of the you know, there's no way to store it after mm-hmm. the fact, and it's 40-year technology. And so we gave them a gift mm-hmm. in World War II, a couple gifts that they weren't really gifts, in the form of nuclear atomic bombs, right? Mm-hmm. Hiroshima and Nagasaki, right? And just logically, from the timing, because the technology has been around about 50 years. It started in hospitals, and then they brought it to homes. But, you know, think about having nuclear contamination, how that affects the water.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Imagine trying to, besides the direct radiation, that water's nuclear.
Right.
And try to, water's, your body is 75% water. It's mm-hmm. more important than the food that we eat, because you can go 2 or 3 weeks without food, but sure. 3 days without water, and you're dehydrated and you can die, right? Sure. So my thought is, why would you need to make water back to origin, especially mm-hmm. if it's nuclear water,
right.
atomic water? Try right. to grow healthy children mm-hmm. and your water supply is so, like, right. that's my theory that I don't hear, you know, people yeah. talking about.
Sure.
So he researched everything and came back and realized that it was all true, because he said, half of this is true, I'll become a millionaire. And he became very successful, you know, with the business side of it. If I didn't have the music disease, I'd probably be more mm-hmm. successful with that. But I believe in it. And I give people free water.
Great.
And it's really important. So I'm going to share that water. And people
Thank
can
you.
Go to danshealthywater.com to learn more about okay. that. And there's a great little – go ahead.
Were you gonna say something? I was just going to say, we've been going for, I think, like an hour and a half.
Okay.
And I don't – what I prepared
because
you would ask me.
Yeah.
No, I don't know that we should do it, to be honest, because I've prepared about an hour and a half on the Rockefeller takeover of medicine. And
let's get to
I just don't know.
Let's go into it. Let's go okay. into the rock, because that's enough of the water. Tell me about
I mean, it's, but I did really prepare. Yeah, as you can see, I don't know that we want to go through. I don't know what you want
to. Can I think we should go, because we need to go into it. And
okay.
we've got some videos.
The videos alone are probably about 25 minutes. So, and I've prepared at least an hour, maybe an hour and a half.
So here's what I think then. Let's link. We're going to link those videos. Let's not play them live. We can link those. But from people that don't know anything about the Rockefeller, mm-hmm. this whole thing in Western medicine, like, how could you fill them in? What are we talking about?
Okay. Yeah, it's a lot. So I didn't really prepare like a cursory, because I thought that was going to be the focus of the topic today. So I don't know. Do you want me to give me like a brief overview?
What do you want? It depends on like your awareness of time. Like I'm open to it. Generally, I mean, I usually do an hour and a half, but this is so important. Tell me whatever you want to tell me about.
Okay. I'll just start going through, I guess. So we'll start around, it was around 1904, the Rockefeller, this is kind of like the early, you know, it goes pretty far back. But we'll start around 1904, they created the General Education Fund. And this was what kind of parlayed its way into becoming the Rockefeller Foundation. That happened around 1913. So during the early 1900s, the Rockefellers became like the, you know, they had the Standard Oil Company, so they had the monopoly
on oil, essentially. That became later divided into Mobil, Chevron, Exxon, a lot of the main, you know, oil companies that we know of today. He owned about 90% of all petroleum products. So this is really instrumental because this is how we get to petrochemicals. Petrochemicals come on the scenes, and of course, you know, most of what they were using petrochemicals for was plastics. But the organic chemists knew that, you know, you could just certainly do much more than make plastic toys. And so that around this time, they were also discovering, they were doing a lot of research on, you know, deficiencies, vitamins, essential vitamins. And they discovered that B1, which is very essential for later when we discuss cancer. I actually, not too long ago, interviewed G. Edward Griffin, which was like a huge, huge, you know, like a bucket list moment for me. Because I think he's like the OG red pill guy.
And he is the, because he is who wrote the book Creature from Jekyll Island, which was, and you said 1913. I didn't know the Rockefeller Foundation formed there because we also got the Federal Reserve and the IRS in the same year. So it's all tied together. So you're talking about oil.
It was a big year for the Rockefellers. There were a lot, the American Cancer Society, they founded that in 1913 also.
They founded the UN Trilateral Commission, Council of Foreign Relations.
But the actual, that not all of that in 1913.
But no.
But 1913, the American Cancer Society, they also founded.
But it became one big tentacle of to take over all
they
of world government.
They also were very instrumental in developing the Wellington, funding the Wellington House.
Okay, so I don't know about, tell me about the Wellington House. I don't know about.
But that I would advise people to watch. I've done several series on Tavistock and the
Tavistock, which is the marketing agency, right? That's a brain.
They're a think tank. They're very involved in the origins of propaganda.
They can,
Prior to that, at the Wellington House, they were the British Propaganda Bureau. But I was just going to say, I would advise people, I've done several shows on the origins of Tavistock, like what led up to Tavistock, and that was the Wellington House at the British Propaganda Bureau. Okay. The purpose of it was to compete, or at least the public purpose of what they told us was that it was to compete with the German Propaganda Bureau. And it was to manufacture consent on, engaging in the First World War. They developed things like the Creel Commission, George Creel was appointed to helm, and then it was Edward Bernays, who's the double nephew of Sigmund Freud.
Who is the father of modern marketing. He wrote
the book Propaganda, and yes, he used a lot of the techniques that he learned from his uncle Sigmund Freud in order to create what we think of as a PR.
And they're both eugenicists, right? Sigmund Freud is a big Sigmund part Freud. Of the whole eugenics movement, right?
Yeah, Freud was, and the Rockefellers definitely were. The Rockefellers created in 1959 the Population Council, which was all about the, his theories, his Malthusian type of theories.
And eugenics, Malthusian, all this ultimately means that there's this belief system that they felt like a certain people were more entitled to life and that other people's.
Well, Malthusian and eugenics are similar. Yeah. They're not 100% the same. So the eugenicist believes that there was two types of eugenics. There was positive and negative eugenics. So positive eugenics was the idea that certain people should breed and procreate in order to propagate certain genetics and certain bloodlines. And there was negative eugenics, which is the term we hear today often is the useless eaters. So it was, we should breed out those people. So a lot of people who were considered those that should be, it's kind of like the social Darwinistic.
Which hides into Planned Parenthood and Margaret Sanger, who said that, and they
Bill Gates' father.
Yeah, was tied to that. He was the president, right?
Yep, they were eugenicists.
And what did she say? She was a flat out racist, and they put them mostly in projects. And she said, "We need to root out the weeds," and was talking about African American people, right? And she specifically
it was very racially motivated, but it wasn't just African Americans. She was also talking about the disabled. The poor,
you know, they're really the same people that the eugenicists were.
You know, what's an interesting thing, and I don't know if you've looked at this, when you look at, you know, this all ties to, and I look at the Rockefellers as the American proxies to the Rothschilds, who've been around much longer.
And well, they did a joint trust in, I think it was prior to, I'm going to blank on the year, but they actually joined forces together. They
created. Have you ever thought of this simple concept of, if you look at all of the people that, look at David Rockefeller, look at Jacob Rothschild, look at Bill Gates. Are these the best looking people in the world that should be telling us who should be breeding or not? I mean, look at them. Like, seriously.
I don't think they see it at that as being the top criteria.
They don't, but we, just looking at them, like if you were going to say, if anybody was fit to say who should be breeding, I would say people like Joe Rogan, that we should have more men that are that healthy, yourself, people that are physically fit. And these people don't fall into any of those. These are the, I look at them as the rejects. And and so in a way, it kind of brings me to this concept of narcissism, is the people that want to control everyone else are the most insecure about themselves. Because if you're comfortable with who you are, why would you want to control anybody, right? But it's always, it comes down to me, it all comes down to Satanism and narcissism. And narcissism says the problem is everybody else. It's never me. I'm always right. But I look at these people that were, because Hitler got eugenics from the Rockefellers, and he also got it from the way we treated the Native Americans. But there was a specific group of people in California that he was paying attention to, California eugenicists. Have you kind of looked at that, some of the, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, the eugenics web is pretty deep, you know. I mean, there's a you know, obviously the Darwin model, it's really social Darwinism. So I don't know how deep you want to go down that rabbit hole, but that's a I've definitely covered.
So how did
but the eugenics movement, just to kind of wrap up on that, because they were talking about positive eugenics, negative eugenics. And, you know, there were many different models that they used in order to kind of, you know, determine both. But that's slightly different than Malthusian. Malthusian is this idea that there's a, this is, again, where that term useless eaters comes from, because they believe that, and this is also what propagates the climate hoax, because they're under the impression that there are limited finite resources. And that we are in danger of those resources.
Which is a lie. It's a lie that fossil fuels come from fossils. They come from dinosaurs. There's actually, and, you know, I believe that we should be investing in renewable energy. I differ in what I believe in hemp, big time hemp. You know, we could replace, you know, I love that Joe Rogan got into talking with Elon Musk about they were talking about Ford. They were talking about how Henry Ford designed a car that could be run completely on hemp. And it's 10 times stronger than steel. Right? I have this theory that, because honestly, we can probably do many podcast episodes and go, and there's, but I have this theory that roads, take roads, and it's all connected. That's petroleum based, right? The Rockefeller is going to be tied into that. But these roads are constantly being worked on. And if you talk to, usually the progression of somebody who wakes up goes from conservative to libertarian, then straight into anarchist, right? Voluntarist, whatever you want to call it, is, in other words, I believe in the individual, and government is always going to be inclined towards corruption and self-serving. And it's a corporation into, so I have this theory. I believe in hempcrete roads, because, you know, they would look at roads in Europe. They've been around for 1,000 years, and they're still there. They're stone or brick, right? And so part of the whole road thing, it's because when you get into libertarians, they're like, who will build the roads? That's, you know, and like, how about people that will build roads the first time, so they don't have to be maintained over and over again with contracts, specific people. So hempcrete. So all this stuff is tied together. But one of the things that we should touch on, the transition from standard oil to medicine, how did that go? How does that look like? We're talking about herbs, and can you talk about that?
So they owned the monopoly on the petrochemicals. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to figure out what they could do with this monopoly on the oils. And that's when they went into producing petrochemicals. So essentially, synthetic, because as I was saying before about how this around this time, they were discovering things like vitamin deficiencies. And I was going through the list of vitamin B1, B2, biotin, vitamin C, A, D. And that this is when they were starting to realize that, solving the deficiencies could cure certain diseases, right? Like scurvy, vitamin C deficiency.
Scurvy is a back. Isn't scurvy a back thing? Tell me what scurvy is.
Scurvy?
Yeah.
I don't think it's a back. Now I'm going to doubt myself and look it up. But it's caused by vitamin C deficiency. So pain there. I guess people may experience. I thought it was rashes. And they do say rashes. So it could be pain in muscles, whole body fever, loss of appetite, malaise, fatigue, mouth bleeding, gums or tooth loss, skin rashes or red spots, also common bruising, coiled hair, failure to thrive, irritability, muscle weakness, swollen gums, or weight loss. That's kind of what I thought. I didn't think it was specifically a back, but I guess if you're having muscle weakness,
muscles and your skeletal is all connected.
Sure. No, so you might feel back pain, but I don't think that's specifically a scurvy thing. But they had determined that it was vitamin C deficiency. So at this time, they started to create synthetic lab-made vitamins. Vitamin C was actually one of the first ones to be made. And I think that was in, 1925 or something. Thing like that. I have to look it up. So they saw an opportunity now to have petrochemicals. And so because of course these could now be owned, they could be patented.
Because you can't patent an herb, right?
Exactly.
Because it's God made. They didn't create it. So
the laws on patents is that it has to be something that is synthetic. There has to be some sort of modification of something natural.
Mm-hmm. The way my mother described to me is that they had these excess petrochemicals, which petrol is the word for oil, that right?
Right.
And it couldn't patent an herb. So they took these chemicals and combined. And that's what modern medicine really is this combination, which is really defeating the purpose of that root natural thing, right.
Well, now they're adding a synthetic element,
which is foreign to the body, right?
Right. Well, which in many cases is toxic. Mm-hmm. It's toxic to the body. So at the time, it was actually very popular to have modalities like herbalist or holistic medicine, naturopaths. So these types of modalities were much more common and preferable. And so they had to figure out how to combat this. And so he commissioned Abraham Flexner, who was one of the medical advisors at the time, in order to do this report and submit it to Congress. And their argument was that there were too many medical schools and too many doctors in the United States at the time. And therefore, they needed to standardize the medical schools to deal with this problem. And so this is where... And you've seen this resurface many times since then, but they decided that anybody who was practicing a more traditional type of medicine, whether it be, herbal, naturopathic, chiropractic, that they were unscientific quackery. So they demonized them, calling them quacks.
They were jailing them. Mm-hmm. They were, taking their ability away to practice away, and they were killing them too.
Yeah, I heard stories about when it come to cancer, they were very invested because they created the American Cancer Society, that they were finding that B17 was very instrumental in cancer prevention or remedy. and that some doctors are actually being arrested.
And they banned vitamin B C because that was one of those things when in, you know, when I got into Kami Water, I was really learning about the immune, you know, and the FDA made it illegal.
Right.
And then, you know, one of the things that my mom told me that really helped me to wake up to all this, my little brother had, you know, epilepsy, you know, and so, you know, he was given Ritalin and had really bad side effects to Ritalin. And my mom started researching that there was an herb for treating, let's see, Ritalin is for, I'm trying to remember.
ADHD.
It's ADHD, right? So, which is funny because I'm like totally ADHD. Thank God my mother never put me on, like, I'm the prime guy. If I would have been 3 years later, they would have singled me out and said, drug this kid up. And my mom probably would have rejected it. But ADHD, she told me, there was an herb, and I can't remember what it was, that everybody used for ADHD. And then there was a this one case where somebody got sick or something bad happened, and the FDA raided all the health food stores and pulled this herb up and they brought in Ritalin the next week. And it was, in other words, it was a false flag. Another, and, you know, let's say, hey, it's normal for any type of thing. Like we were talking about, people have like, it, that might not even be a conspiracy or, you know, but I mean, they had, the point is this, any kind of thing, one person has something happen to, well, you know, that's how crazy all this is. But have you gone, do you look at that, that, you know, they created the FDA, right? The Rockefellers created the FDA.
Yeah, it started as the Pure Food Act in 1906, I believe it was. And then it was 1908, I think, when the actual FDA was created. And the Rockefellers were very involved in that as well.
But very involved in, the way I look at it is it's a protection agency for the pharmaceutical companies, and they attack anybody who has any type of alternative.
Yeah, I did a whole thread on the FDA. People want to go look at my Twitter, because that will take a bit of time to go through all of the development of the FDA. But yeah, it really had nothing to do with protection. It had everything to do with squashing the competition, which is exactly
what
the Rockefellers were doing here. So they commissioned the Flexner Report, and they demonized anybody who was, you know, not in the allopathic method or model of medicine as being a quack. And then they largely fund. So they teamed up with the Carnegies. Carnegies were involved in the steel business. And they had created, what did they call it? It was in their 1889 essay, Gospel of Wealth, and they called it scientific philanthropy. And this really just reminds me so much of who was just actually convicted for, I want to say, like 115 years in prison, Sam Bankman-Fried.
Oh, yeah.
But he was the head of the Effective Altruism organization. And this philosophy is very much like, it reminds me, this scientific philanthropy really reminds me of effective altruism. It's this idea that it's a very like John Stuart Mill utilitarian kind of principle. But essentially it's the idea that these wealthy people will, you know, donate, the way they worded it, we'll just read it, is they call for the wealthy to channel their money to society by replacing individual charity. So this is now the, of course, giving themselves power, because they know better what to do than us peons.
And you're saying right there, it's important. Collectivism against individualism, which is always the root. Freedom is always geared towards the individual.
Right.
And tyranny always moves with collective.
Well, but it's also community, right? They're replacing community and now deferring to larger removed entities or, you know, and it's not even just rumored people. It's these big entities, because it's all these NGOs and government support.
It's but the growth of government. It's like that. This whole movement you're talking about is like expanded government in every way. All these industries you're talking about. What's interesting too is was it the Sherman Trust Act, the antitrust act. Mm-hmm. They were going after Standard Oil, mm-hmm. and they went to break it up. But instead, mm-hmm. the Rockefeller, and I have to say, as much as they're evil, they're great businessmen, because they said, mm-hmm. oh, so you're going to destroy us. And then they broke it up into all these other oil companies, mm-hmm. Shell, BP, and became much more powerful. Mm-hmm. So they kind of tricked the government. And then what they did is they became the government, right? Mm-hmm. But isn't it interesting when you're looking at about all of this and the history of homeopathic medicine and all this, mm-hmm. goes back thousands of years, mm-hmm. to the beginning of life, and to have this group all of a sudden come over and quickly take it over, okay. is so far off like the realm of natural order. Mm-hmm. It's like a control mechanism that just comes in. And right. to me, that itself is like demonic, right? Mm-hmm. So like all of a sudden doesn't matter what all you guys are doing that works. Right. We've got this product we want to sell. And now, mm-hmm. we're going to create the government around that product.
Right.
And this is high level fascism.
Right.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So they, but just to finish that, they channel their money to replace individual charity and then support for systematic social improvement conducive to order, productivity, and secular advancement. So that was what their goals were. It was very much involved in replacing. And this is when you talk about individual charity, who would normally be involved in individual charities? It usually was religious institutions.
The church.
Right, exactly.
It's so important to talk about this. Ron, mm-hmm. Paul talks about, you know, he delivered 6,000 babies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he said this, and it's really important. He said, you know, back when I was a doctor, there was no poor people, homeless people, single mom that didn't get treated. Everybody got treated. And he said, whatever wasn't there in, mm-hmm. funds that they didn't have, the church took over. Right. And what's interesting about that, mm-hmm. is that in a way they didn't allow the church now to, so that's satanic in itself, right? Mm-hmm. And this is really important. Mm-hmm. They also own and created 501(c) status, mm-hmm. in the church. And so that's like Judas Iscariot, the money bags, mm-hmm. they control, and that controls what you can say in the church. So, right. you know, if you think about it, they took over the church. Mm-hmm. They took over the medical industry. They, mm-hmm. took over oil. Mm-hmm. They're lying about fossil fuels, all this. They take over education, the medical industry. Mm-hmm. Then they created the UN for world government. Mm-hmm. And then if you look at in the pandemic, what we kind of really learned is world government is already here. People say, oh, they're creating the world. It's already, mm-hmm. here, mm-hmm. because they've taken over on a local level. And I was listening, mm-hmm. to Elon Musk talk about George Soros. So, mm-hmm. George Soros is really a Rothschild proxy, mm-hmm. but the Rothschilds and even the Rockefellers are more known publicly. Mm-hmm. Rothschilds like to lurk in the shadows. They don't like to, and that's why they've also been around controlling all the banks of the world, central, mm-hmm. banks, for over 350 years. But he was talking about the other day, and it's really important. He was talking about how George Soros has learned, mm-hmm. that he gets more bang for his buck by taking over and investing in local governments, mm-hmm. rather than, which is kind of the opposite of the Rockefellers in a way, but instead of investing in a president, if you invest in, so in other words, taking over the DAs, mm-hmm. taking over the mayors, and we just found out, I'm a big believer that the mayor election here in Nashville was 100% stolen, because I was, mm-hmm. I was rooting for my friend Alice Rowley, mm-hmm. and I was involved playing for events, and, mm-hmm. she is a conservative that would have been the answer to a lot of good things. No politician is the answer, mm-hmm. but it's been five corrupt Democrat big government administrations, mm-hmm. that bankrupted Nashville 100%. Mm-hmm. So I can't remember where, but it was just, I just saw on X, somewhere on the East Coast, they just discovered the mayor election was rigged there,
right.
and they're going to have to do a recall or something like that. So like during the pandemic, we realized when it was all coordinated, and that I call it the sustainable cities networks, and this is all an important word people need to know. Agenda 2030. Now they're even calling it Agenda 2040, right?
Agenda 2045.
Okay, that's okay.
And they have Agenda 2050, which is very much tied to the medical.
Can you tell us, like, briefly, kind of like what is
Agenda 2045? Is really the AI World Society. They're building it. The UN 100, along with the Boston Global Forum, is talking about. They've done recently. They're rebuilding Ukraine. So this is what a lot of the funding for Ukraine looks like it's going towards. But the rebuilding Ukraine is all about making their AI World Society, where they make Ukraine into the hub for the AI world takeover. They call it the AI World Society. And then they're connecting it to all of these smart cities. So all these 15-minute cities will be connected to Ukraine, which is the hub for them.
Really? So I didn't know about this one. That's an angle I haven't heard on you. Ukraine is the technological hub to
That's what they're working on. That's what they're saying. Anybody can go find it. It's the UN 100. They're working in partnership with the Boston Global Forum. They recently just had Michael Dukakis is one of the leaders. He just wrote, they're calling it the Age of Global Enlightenment. And Dukakis just wrote a book. He just had his 90th birthday. They were celebrating. And he just wrote a book on it. They're calling him the leader of the Age of the Global Enlightenment. Of course, the Age of Global Enlightenment is really about the AI world takeover. It's not just the New World Order. It's really the AI world takeover. They're talking about creating a hyborg mind that kind of creates, and that controls everything. And it's a virtual world. Like when they talk about putting you in a metaverse, they mean it, you know, pretty literally. They're talking about transhuman leading to a post-human world. And the different hubs. So they're creating all of they want to make a network with all of these different smart cities with Ukraine as the hub. Then Agenda 2050, and I have this listed also. I have a bunch of tweets on that. But Agenda 2050 is kind of linked more to the medical system where, you know, all the biometric data surveillance and it looks pretty benign when you look on the website. And I know I've been kind of attacked. A couple of people were like, look at everything through a sinister lens. But we saw through COVID where a lot of these things can go, where things that seem like benign kind of tracking measures then get weaponized. And so I don't have a lot of faith that they're doing this all just innocently. So
no, it's all about control. Really about control. And this is why it's so important. Like I'm slowly reading, life has been so busy, but I'm reading RFK Jr.'s book, The Real Anthony Fauci.
Yeah, he's doing a great job.
And the important thing is like, the people that it's so important for us to go into details of all these things. And I we could do a whole thing on, but it's, if you didn't catch this psyop, you really didn't fundamentally, like if you're still wearing a mask, you're driving around wearing a mask, you're dead in the next one. You're gone. You're not going to make it. You're SOL, right? And that's why it's so important that we take the time to bring out the nuances of the pandemic for the people that still really don't know what's happening, you know?
Yeah. So like a really great example of this exactly is that it was during between 1910 and 1914, they actually, the Rockefellers orchestrated what was called the Rockefeller Sanitary Commission for the Eradication of Hookworm Disease. So his advisors, it was Frederick T. Gates, no relation to Bill.
Okay.
But Charles Wardell Stiles and Wycliffe, I think that's it. Wycliffe probably Rose. They perceived hookworm to explain the backwardness of the southern states in the United States, and that was what was precluding them from industrialization. And so they the Rockefellers helped them orchestrate this this commission, and they figured out how to use public health so that they could eliminate disease via, and this was just interesting, the anthelmintic drugs, which are essentially antiparasitic, to promote wearing shoes, which I thought that was really interesting because, not that I advocate walking outside barefoot all the time, but the fact that we are so disconnected from the ground. is really, really detrimental. You know,
and that's a really important thing, that there's whole people that believe in grounding, which I do. I'm in nature all the time, and I'm walking around barefoot, and it's really like, you know, I think about, like Christ said, if you want to go to heaven, you got to go through the eyes of a child. Really, the healthiest you can be is playing out in the mud, eating stuff off the ground. This is how the immune system works. And they've told us, so they brainwash us.
Yeah, you know? I wouldn't necessarily, it's not so much just for people to have a context, because immune system, I think it's a little fuzzy for a lot of people, but it directly impacts the microbiome. And so that's why, especially for children, it's really important that they go and play like in the grass, you know, feet on the grass. A lot of our sensorial perceptions about the world come from, you know, the nerve endings on our feet. So,
and if you're going into more of a metaverse world, then these kids are less going to be outside. Because were you not one of those kids that was outside all day long, right? Like our parents couldn't get us inside. As a matter of fact, it's like, like, I don't think our parents know how far we really went out on our bikes or whatever. But, you know, it's like, and that's so important. And it's not just important for children. It's important for us adults. In the stress of things that happen in the world, I'm the closest to God, the healthiest outside, vitamin D. Like, that's another thing about 80% of COVID patients were lacking vitamin D. So this idea that we...
So again, to take it out of the context of COVID, they know that they've lied to us about the sun. And the sun being a prime source of nutrition.
Which Bill Gates blocks out the sun.
Yeah, he wants to block out the sun. So
all of that.
Yeah, so it deteriorates our health. It for many reasons. It, you know, it messes up our circadian rhythm. Our getting sunlight first thing in the morning actually helps regulate our circadian rhythm. It helps us to suppress melatonin at that time so that we can elevate it at night so that we can sleep well. Melatonin correlates to cortisol, which is inversely correlated to insulin. And with people, you know, having a surge of metabolic disease, that's really important. And that's probably a large part of why. So just to wrap this up, the other ones they advocated were latrines, which is basically just, you know, public bathrooms, and public health propaganda. So that was
spell it out right there.
Yeah, they do.
In their own words.
I actually got that from the Lancet. So the Lancet was a little bit more honest back then.
And the Lancet was they rigged studies on ivermectin.
Yeah, that's why I say it was a little bit more honest back then.
Yeah.
It seems anyway. So the success of this organization, this commission, is what led the Rockefellers to create the International Health Board in 1927. So that became the International Health Division. And that was connected to, it then became the International Health Division in the UN as well. So that came right out of that whole thing on hookworms, which was kind of interesting. And then I don't know, I'll go through, you kind of get the gist, but some things later on, like they had a drug trust alliance in 1939, which was between the Rockefeller Empire and IG Farben. IG Farben later became Bayer.
Bayer is now Monsanto, and Bayer was used, they used all kinds of biological weapons and wars, and these are, you know, it's all,
well, IG Farben was the 100% like subsidiary for Auschwitz, so
this is all ties into if you look at Hitler, he was funded by all these people. You know, he was Time Person of the Year, and they built him up. And then, and this is the whole thing, is they're always funding, like you're saying, trust, like everything is the opposite. Like these people, like it really remind, like Bill Gates, Klaus Schwab, they remind me of real life Dr. Evil, right? You know, and it's so blatant in our face, but you know, the propaganda is so strong, and I've been beating people over the head, you know, lately about the greatest revolution you could do: shoot your TV, blow it up. Like, so much propaganda comes like, mm-hmm. get your kids outside, right. and dads, read a book or go right. out on the firing range,
right?
And go to the gym and become an alpha male. Mm-hmm. Stop worshiping people on the TV that are alpha male and mm-hmm. pretending you're an alpha male because you're watching it. Mm-hmm. Get in more involved with your kids' life mm-hmm. because we are in times that to preserve the human race, mm-hmm. men are going to have to become alpha males. And mm-hmm. women, I've noticed, because mm-hmm. men have not picked up that role. And many men are not fathering their children. Mm-hmm. And so it's left women in a place where they have to be the man and the woman, and they've had to become strong, and they don't trust men. And how can they when you have a bunch of narcissist beta males? And that's what they're breeding in us. That's mm-hmm. what they want. They want to neuter the man. Mm-hmm. They want to destroy the nuclear family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether you think about it from a religious, historical perspective, what a healthy society, it mm-hmm. always comes back to a healthy nuclear family. Mm-hmm. If there's not a healthy father, not a healthy mother mm-hmm. role model, that kid has a lot less chance of a successful, healthy life mm-hmm. and certainly not prepared, you know, mm-hmm. for these times, you know? Right. So I just want to say, we have a common friend, mm-hmm. Amy Pfeffer, mm-hmm. yeah, who is the reason great. Why yeah. I met you through yeah. social media, and it's how we network yeah. and all that. And you guys had something, what you had a group during the pandemic, and what was that?
Well, it wasn't my group. Okay. I've done different things with yeah, Amy. Yeah, yeah. And Amy was actually my 100th episode. So anybody oh, who okay. is watching can go watch that episode. She's become a dear friend, and she was one of the first people I actually met when I moved here. So very grateful to Amy. I think she's wonderful. She had a thing. I don't know if she wants to publicly announce it, but she had a group put together. I won't mention the name of it, but it was essentially just a group of patriots who during the pandemic would get together, people who were basically just in favor of medical freedom. And we had a mutual friend who invited me to that. And yeah, it's a great group. So,
and Amy is a friend of mine mm-hmm. from like way back in the day when she was doing music serious mm-hmm. in the country.
Very pop talented.
And incredibly
yeah.
talented, yeah. an amazing singer. Mm-hmm. And she's what I love about her. She's very soulful mm-hmm. and she's got this whole soulful thing.
Yeah.
And so Amy was one of those mm-hmm. that took a hard stance standing up against all this. And part of it for mm-hmm. her, and this is so important, is tied in with the sex trafficking background sure. that she grew up with. And there's a whole story to right. that in which she realized
the sex industry. So yeah. just to differentiate yeah. between trafficking yes, and yes. sex industry. But she shared her story, and it is really,
and it's very important. And what she saw was, she had knowledge of the healthcare industry, and what she saw was the techniques mm-hmm. that they were using to propagandize people were the same that were used in the sex mm-hmm. trade, and okay. that was taking control of, you know, mm-hmm. in her case, a woman's body, mm-hmm. men taking control. And it's mm-hmm. similar, you know, in all that. So Amy took a really strong stance, and because of that, we started writing mm-hmm. and we started. And so the first thing is, I love that. Was that particularly women, just particularly mm-hmm. that group? And there's something,
what group?
The group that you were involved with. No, it was not women. No, it was all patriots. Okay. All
well, it was
types.
Medical freedom. Advocates, medical freedom. Really okay. just people who were not in favor of the medical tyranny, you know, during, so I came a little bit later, but it was really people during 2020 who were opposed to the medical tyranny. So.
There was a great movement of people. Mm-hmm. There was a Free Tennessee movement. I don't mm-hmm. know if you're part of that. And those were friends of mine, Kimberly and yeah. Josh Edwards, okay. and they created all the
I
protests.
Only moved here 2 years ago, okay. so, yeah.
so they organized major protests at the state capitol right okay. away. They were, okay. She's a mom mm-hmm. and just a badass. Mm-hmm. And he was a musician.
Well, so maybe one of the things that you might want to look into, yeah. I still don't know. I have not had time to research this because I've been busy with all the Senate stuff, but I know my audience has heard me talk about it many times. There are only two states in the United States. It's West Virginia and Tennessee, where naturopathic medicine is illegal.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, you said Tennessee?
Tennessee and West Virginia.
Yeah, so it's illegal to hold a naturopathic license. And so I know people do get around it with things like functional medicine or like functional nutrition type stuff. But yeah, to actually hold a license in the naturopathic space, I don't know the exact parameters around it, but it was something I had looked into getting my naturopathic degree. And then I moved here and found out that that was illegal. So I'd be very curious, and I would love to see if there's something we can do to, you know, rectify that.
I mean, that's insane that it's illegal. And, you know, there's so many things that people should be aware about. Like, we were going to get into this whole topic about cancer, and it's all tied together. But as an activist, when I got into the water, because of my mom, I started compiling a list of all the things I would do if I ever got cancer. And at the time, I was, when I even got involved with Conga Water, I was still smoking cigarettes. And I felt like a hypocrite, to be honest, because I would have these groups, and I was setting up the water, and they talk about geoengineering and all this, and we go deep down the rabbit hole, and it's a great to build community. And that's what I like about the point is, you brought community together, and it's so important, an important solution, because we can talk about all the problems, but the best thing I have learned to deal with a globalist problem is always met with local solutions.
I agree.
Localize as much as possible.
Local community and local.
Community starts with the individual, empowering the individual,
right?
Then the nuclear family, which you can go down the whole rabbit hole of the Rockefellers created the whole women's right feminist movement.
They didn't create it. They were very instrumental in funding it. I would say that really the Fabian socialists were very instrumental in the feminist movement, but it definitely didn't originate.
This is what Aaron Russo said. Okay. Aaron Russo was the guy who, he was Bette Midler's manager. He produced The Rose, a really powerful guy. And this is how he describes it. He was on Alex Jones InfoWars years ago.
Okay.
And his story is so important. People should look this up. I highly encourage look it up on YouTube. Aaron Russo.
Okay.
This is what he says. When you get to a certain point in entertainment, Hollywood, or anything like that, you get to a certain level, you're going to be approached literally by the Illuminati in different levels, different families. And what they're going to do is they're going to court you. And this is what happened to them. One of the Rockefellers came to him and started courting him because he was a big deal, a promoter in Chicago.
Okay.
And he was doing, he wrote and directed Trading Places, Eddie Murphy. Okay. So he was a very successful guy.
Right.
And he got approached by the Rockefeller, one of the Rockefellers, one of the younger ones, and started courting them, him and his wife, and Aaron Russo and his wife. And they'd go out, and they it just came to this. He said, listen, we're trying to basically recruit you, literally. And, and he goes, he started telling him, this was years ago, about the wars, 9/11. He goes, listen, we're going to have people chasing people around, you know, people in caves in Afghanistan to take everybody's liberty away. I mean, this is like, and he died of cancer, and everybody believes he was killed. Okay. But, so he said this, that he said that this Rockefeller said to him, do you want to know why we created the women's lib movement? He said, because it's to make the woman feel like she's not successful. It's not good enough to be at home, that your man is a jerk, and you need to go out and you need to go work. And the reason why is because if you want to indoctrinate society, you have to own the children. So if you get mom out from out of home, what happens? She's at work. Then you have latchkey programs, what they were called when I was a kid. So the goal is to get the government, the kid with the government, as much as possible away from the family. So in what happens is the government becomes the parents. And when you indoctrinate them, and now we live in a world where school teachers are saying that the kid can decide if he wants to have a transgender surgery, and the parents, it's illegal now. The parents interject. So now the state is the parent.
Right.
And the, you know.
So I've done many shows, as you had read in my bio, the Right Voices. It is a counter to the feminist movement. It's a female roundtable group. I've done many shows. My friend Rachel Wilson, she wrote a book on the occult roots of feminism. So this is something we cover quite a bit. Yeah. It definitely did not start with the Rockefellers. The Rockefellers were definitely instrumental. I had mentioned the Wellington House. They were very instrumental in the early funding. And of course, in actually developing the grant for the Tavistock Institute for Human Relations, a large grant did come from the Rockefellers. But the Wellington House, from the very beginning, one of their primary initiatives was the Women's Lib movement. But I would just argue that it does predate that. You know, that's what, 1910, 1912, maybe. You know, and this feminist movement, I think it has pagan roots. So
this all goes back to paganism.
Yeah, it goes pretty far back.
Ball worship, all that.
I hate you, but yeah, we should probably wrap it up.
So Tavistock, I just want to say, there's a great book I read. Mm-hmm. Is it the Tavistock Institute? Somebody did a great book, and because that's a dark mm-hmm. thing.
I covered quite a bit of it. It's the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations. So there's really currently only two books on it right now.
Yeah, what are they?
One of them is Dr. John Coleman, and it retails for almost $5,000 on Amazon. I do have it pinned on my Telegram, mm-hmm. the PDF of it, if anybody wants that. I'm not selling it for anything. It's just pinned on my Telegram, and that's the PDF. And he's not losing any money, because as far as I know, I do not believe Dr. John Coleman is with us anymore. I've done major search to try and find any kind of information on his, you know, if he's passed or not. There just mm-hmm. doesn't seem to be anything on him. So if there is, I welcome people sharing that information with me. The other one is Dan Estulin, and a lot of his book is citing Dr. John Coleman's work, but he has also done a book on Tavistock. But those are really the only.
And two. I think I read, I just found the book, actually, Tavistock Institute. I think that's what I read, and mm-hmm. and just that book alone. So where can people find your work?
So the best place probably to find me is the CourtneyTurner.com. I spell my name like Courtney, so CourtneyTurner.com. And I am on all platforms that you can find podcasts. But I don't post very much on YouTube because they keep kicking me off. So, you know, I appreciate being followed there. Subscribe, like, share everything, but it's probably not the best place to get all of my information. So I'm very active on Rumble, BitChute, Odyssey, Rockfin, and I'm on about 20 audio platforms. And of course, on my website, you can find everything. So, and then also I do something called the CauseFest, because I do think that they have used the arts to co-opt and culture creation and social 100%. Engineering of the masses. And so CAUSE stands for Creative Artists Uniting for the Sovereignty of Everyone. We had a festival. It was June 3rd and 4th in Franklin, Tennessee. We had 53 acts. It is 23 hours of content. You can find all of that on the website. It's Rebels, plural, four spelled out, F-O-R, CAUSE.com. We had musicians, comedians. I'm an aerial acrobatic performer. I did two routines. We had filmmakers, fine artists, panel discussions, and of course, tons of wonderful speakers. So I highly recommend you check that out. We are in the process of fundraising for the next one. As you can imagine, that was not a cheap event to put on. And we want to provide the best quality, especially for our performers. So yeah, we are looking to tour because we want to build local networks and bring this around the country throughout the next year. So if you are so inclined and you want to sponsor, there you can reach out on that website and contact me. And if you just want to make a donation, because every little bit helps, then there is a link there for that as well.
So, awesome.
Thank you.
So I think what a great thing to do. So what we're going to do with this is we're going to, you know, release this. Mm-hmm. Clearly it's on X, it's on your mm-hmm. Twitter. And then I'm going to have my web guy put some intro music. Sure. And we're going to put this on musiccityrevival.live. So since a lot of this is music, I'd like us to, if we could just play the song, The Great Awakening, that I wrote uh-huh. with Amy. I think that'd be a great song because it talks about all of this stuff, and we can just use that, play it out. Uh-huh. That'd be a great way to close it. Thank you so much for chatting with you. There's so many things I want to get more involved learning about what you're doing so we network and work together and the things that we're doing. So
absolutely. Thank you.
destruction, shoulder to shoulder we stand, closer and closer together, cause we were waking to your place. Cause we were waking to your place.